then I don't know, last year, somebody contacted us from British Airways. They were having a strike. I think it was 2 or 3 years, right? And 2 year strike, very bitter strike. And somebody thought it would be nice if we came in and gave a program. So some vice president thought they would try to bring us in. And then they said, we need references of companies you've worked for before, and you know, personal references. So then I had to dig out all these, you know, proofs that we were nice people, and they wanted to see my degree, my Princeton degree. So I've avoided Princeton for 30 years, very carefully. They didn't know where I was, but I had to contact them for this. Then they got my name, then it's over. You know, they got my address and they started filling up my post office box. I don't know how they get so much paper and stuff, but they started sending me this alumni magazine, right? And I thought it was really corny, but then I started reading it in the bathroom. And it's beautiful, it's very, very beautiful because it's all happy news. It's all about what people are accomplishing and cool things they're doing, and now I enjoy it more than anything. Like it's all positive, clean, sweet news. No scandals, no wars, and it's all about creative people doing creative things. And there was a little article about I think the lady was a freshman. And she had won this grant. I think it's a $100,000 grant, something like that. And they give it to very young students who demonstrate that they are doing some extraordinary new invention or new project or something like that. And then it's a cool grant. I think they require that you drop out for a year. And they give you $100,000. And they say, follow your dream, you know. And it's very cool. So the lady I read about, she was working on a, she'll probably correct me if I'm wrong, which I probably am, but a collar that goes on a solar panel stand that's made from layers of metal. And when the sun heats up, the metal expands, and when the sun starts to set, the metal shrinks, and it's made in such a way that it turns the panel towards the sun passively, without any electricity. And it helps the panel track the sun with no electricity. And then they thought it was cool enough that they offered her a year off and she took it. And so then, I don't know, we were bringing in speakers about solar energy. We've had, two or three. The minister of energy for one of the states in California, in Mexico, Baja California, we brought him. He's under 30. He's like 28 years old. He just put up three huge windmills, 150-foot fans, wings, and it gives half of the electricity to the poor people in Mexicali, which is the capital of his state. And he just had this vision, and he pulled it off. And so we brought him. He gave a beautiful talk. And we brought one of the executives from First Solar, which is probably the leading solar panel in the world, and their company in the world. And they're in Phoenix, in Mesa. And we're trying to educate ourselves about solar energy and not just be, what do you call it? Mildly interested and not know anything about it, really. You know, just mildly supportive of it, but not know anything about the economics of it, the financing of it, the politics of it, the technology of it, you know, the viability of it. And so we're trying to educate ourselves, because I think as a having our roots in Tibetan Buddhism. Tibetan Buddhism had a high, had a great weakness in Tibet, and it cost them the country. And it was that everybody was meditating and everybody was learning the scriptures, and they weren't really helping the poor people, or they weren't really going out and there were no free clinics or schools, or, you know, it was all in people's heads. And I think we inherited that a little bit, and I did. And I think it's very good if we can sort of round out our spiritual character by doing some hands-on help of poor people and of our environment, you know, our world. And I think it's necessary to be real. There's a one extreme where you're just real all the time and you never meditate. And then there's another extreme where you meditate all the time and you never really help anybody with your hands, you know. And I think they go together. So we've been trying to educate ourselves. And then we had a dream to supply free solar panels to poor people in the Sonora area. Sonora Desert stretches from maybe... when you came here from Phoenix, you came up the Mogollon Rim. You came up, I don't know, 4,000 feet. And, you know, there were passes where you drove up like this, you know. And so the Sonora Desert comes up to that wall. And then it stretches down to, I don't know, almost Vallarta, something like that. And it's a lousy area of the world, you know. It's all rocks and desert and no water. And traditionally, no one's wanted it much. Now with solar farms, and as oil runs out, oil will run out in the United States in 20 years. There will not be any other sources of oil. Even if you blow up mountains and suck out a few drops of oil, there won't be any. Then there'll be this sudden and drastic crunch, you know. There will be no power for air conditioners or cars or preserving food. There will be nothing. You know, suddenly, it'll come very fast. It'll escalate very quickly. The price of gas will double every week, suddenly. And then there will be social unrest. Poor people will rise up. They will suffer, and they will rise up. And there will be a very high possibility of war or famine. And so anyway, I think... we tend to think the government will take care of it, but they're interested in getting elected next year, and oftentimes they're not. Their foresight doesn't go beyond the terms that they might be in power, so in office. So I think as citizens, we have to be sensible. You know, we just have to say, honestly, in my lifetime, oil's going to run out, and we will need other things, or many people will suffer. And so it's sort of up to us as citizens, right, of the world to prepare options, right, to that. People will muddle along. I don't think the world's going to end. I don't believe this Aztec thing. You know, we will muddle along, but it'll suffer. People will suffer, and there will be starvation. And if we can prevent it, no. If we act now, we can help. So anyway, the border area... this Sonora Desert area is becoming very hot. Huge solar farms, 400, 500 acre solar farms, 200 megawatt solar farms are being built now. And it's becoming very valuable property. And it will get more and more valuable. This will be one of the centers of energy, physical energy in the world, will be that useless piece of land. And there'll be great competition for it. The politics of those solar farms will be interesting. Who owns the sun, and who owns the useless flat land, which is perfect for solar panels, right? And the rest of the world will need that power. And there will be great competition for those wide, empty desert areas. It's very interesting. with no water. Solar needs no water. So we think that we would like to contribute. We're sort of in a geographic good luck that we live in that area, and we can contribute to the to that power becoming available for especially poor people who will suffer otherwise as the oil runs out. So if we can be farsighted and if we can lend our hands to some efforts, we can help a lot of people in a real way. And then that's an expression of your spiritual study, right? You have to do something. So anyway, so I was reading the magazine and I thought, oh, I told Rob, what if the next speaker was that young lady from Princeton, and maybe she could teach us something about what she's doing, and we can expand our understanding of solar power. So I'd like to formally welcome Eden Fo, who's come for that. Yeah. Sit there. Then I told Rob, you know, I said, you know, I clean out my bathroom pretty regularly, and I don't know what month it was in her article, and it's only a few lines, and maybe you can contact the Alumni Association and find her. And he did, and he found her, and then he gave me a link to a video, and she's giving a talk to some, I don't know, forum, and it was awesome. And she was, somewhere in the talk she says, and I think we should, every poor person in the world should have a solar panel. And I'm like, get her, you know. And you know, because what happens in Buddhist terms, we say that at the age of around 16 to 20, between 16 and 20, Bhakchak Sepa, say Bhakchak Sepa. So Bhakchak means seeds from your past life. Sepa means they suddenly open up. And some of your best thinking in this life is between 16 and 20, because seeds, all the good seeds from many years in your past lives are opening during that period. You are most creative. You are most romantic. You can kiss your girlfriend all night in the movie, not even notice that everyone else is left. And music sounds better. We all believe the best music was made when we were 16 to 20. No, your senses are more fresh. And then they start to decline as you get older, if you don't know how to plant new ones. So I studied with a rabbi when I was in college. We had to do some paper. Somebody said, go talk to this rabbi in Brooklyn. I went and talked to him. Then we ended up becoming friends for many years. And I would go study with him. And he would say stuff like, nobody over 30 should be president of the United States. You know? And he was like 90 or something. And I was like, "What? Don't older people have more experience?" And he said, no. People under 30 have vision. You know, and they have a vision for the world. And they want to do exciting things to help the world. And then after that, you get sort of jaded and tired and, you know, caught up with material wealth. And, you know, he was insistent. Then I often think about that. And I think, I thought, I saw her in the video, and I was I had this strong feeling that, you know, we're all old, right? And it would be nice to have, like, somebody stick a needle in our butt, you know, and say, you know, to kind of maybe almost guide us or get us going. You know, like we have all these good plans, but we're kind of moving kind of like slow. And it'd be nice to have some firecracker, you know, say, kind of tell us what to do next, you know, about this solar idea. Okay, so that's what I'm hoping, okay? Like, you bring a needle, okay? And so she'll give a talk this afternoon, and then she'll give another talk tomorrow. But I'm hoping it maybe it could go longer than that, you know, in the future, and then you could maybe give us ideas of how we can materialize these good intentions that we have, but we don't really know what to do next, you know. So maybe think about that and give us some concrete suggestions about. We have a lot of friends around the world, thousands and thousands of friends, and Rob just went to Singapore and Taiwan and Beijing. We have an investor group in Singapore. You know, we talk to the Mexican government. Maybe we can throw a couple $1 million at the next wind project or something like that. Or maybe it could be this. We could get them to do the collars or something. I don't know. But we have that capacity. As a group, we have that capacity to raise support for some visionary thing that might help people. So then we need some visionary to tell us what to support. Okay. All right. Okay. Now we'll go to the teaching. But keep that in mind. In Tibetan, they say Semla, Jakshu. Semla, Jakshu. It means, you talk about some wild future idea you have with somebody, and then you say park it in your mind. Chew on it mentally. There's an idea, now chew on it. Tell me what you come up with in a couple of weeks or something. Semla Jakshu. Okay. All right. So this part of this text, which will take 10 years to get through, this is one of the earlier parts. We're about, I don't know, 10% into the text. And he has begun to discuss how to share ideas with other people, how to be a teacher, and how to be a student. So we finished a lot of how to be a student. He's going to come more. There's more coming. But he gives some suggestions about how to be a good teacher. And you could all have the capacity to teach. I think one thing about our group of people is that you have seen that in our group that people have become teachers, right? We didn't import Tibetan lamas to become the teachers. I think there's a great advantage to being a teacher in your own culture, right? If you're from Guadalajara, then you can speak better to the people in Guadalajara than some Tibetan guy. The Tibetan Geshes have never been out of the monastery. Rarely. One I took to the bus station one time, he couldn't buy a bus ticket. He was 50, over 50. He didn't know how to do the count to change or buy a bus ticket. And I think normal people, normal everyday people, lay people, who are trained seriously can be the right teachers for this world, for the modern world. They will be normal people who haven't lived in a monastery or who are not ordained, who have studied hard and trained themselves well. I think they are the teachers for this time, at this time in history. I think they will be the teachers. And it's happening, and it's very beautiful. So you will teach, and you should teach, and it's working. And so we did go to British Air, and we did 2 days of public talks at their corporate center at Waterside in Heathrow Airport, and then we did 3-day retreat for some of the leading executives and some of the leading union members. And the strike was solved within 6 months, I think, after that. I don't think it was us per se, but I think we contributed to that. And that's the kind of, you can bring real contributions to the world. You see, not some Tibetan monk is not going to walk into British Airways and talk to the vice presidents. You know what I mean? You can do that. You will do that. You can apply these ideas to the real world in a non-sectarian or non-religious, what do you call it? In a secular way. You know, I don't think it wasn't our intention to get the vice president of British Airways to have a picture of the Buddha on their desk, or, you know, it's not important. The important thing is that they learned the useful ideas that might help their corporation be a, it's what, 20,000 people, 25,000 people, that it would be a more humane place and a place of greater peace and understanding between all the workers and the management, and, you know, everybody doing yoga and meditating, and believing that by serving each other that they could become more successful, right? So I think who's gonna teach those things is you, okay? That who's gonna do those kinds of programs, it's you, all right? So anyway, we went through the proper motivation. We just completed a section on the proper motivation for being a teacher. Just basically, you should think about helping the people who are participating in the class and not concentrating on your own motivations, like I should look good, or I should look smart, or I should get something from them, money or attention or sex or whatever it is, okay? It should be you are seeking to make their life happier and more successful, right? That's the main motivation. So now we're into physical things. Like he said, you should bathe well. The Buddha, I mean, before every sutra, he takes a soshing. Say soshing. Soshing is a special tree in India. You cut a twig off and you clean your teeth with it. They didn't have toothbrushes or Colgate. And the Buddha often will clean his teeth with a soshing before he gives a talk. You know? And so you should look pleasant and be, what do you call, scrubbed up and wear nice, look nice. I mean, why not? You know, and look happy and look friendly. Okay, when you teach, that he's getting into that kind of thing. Then he says, "Deyan dak tabu chi tumbulan dinda du tend du." Remember that these are records of a lecture given in Tibet, right? 24 days of teaching given in Tibet. And the Lama, who is the teacher of the current Dalai Lama's teacher, right? The current Dalai Lama's grandfather teacher, and my teacher's teacher, he's saying, look, I'm giving this talk, and I'm up on this big throne, okay? And he says, Chokchu Namba Okta Mawa Shukpa means, and all the Rinpoches are sitting down there in the audience. Okay, Rinpoche means, in this context, a reincarnated Lama, right? A Lama. So the Dalai Lama is the 14th, right? And the Panchen Lama is, I think, the 10th. But there are many incarnated Lamas in the monastery, okay? And they get recognized when they're 5 years old or something. Rinpoche's reincarnation is down at the end. He was recognized last year. Rinpoche passed away in 2004. And our teacher, and that's his reincarnation. So they get special privileges, and that's a long story. But anyway, this Lama is teaching a lot of reincarnations during the talk, and he says, I don't feel comfortable. It's a little weird for me. Here are all these high beings in the audience, and I'm up here talking, teaching them. I don't feel comfortable. Tsershing, Gagyu min du, it's uncomfortable for me. Chukichi wa samne du kuche. But I'm pretending to sit up here, higher than the reincarnated, the tukus, right? The reincarnated lamas. Because what I'm saying is higher than all of us. That the ideas I'm expressing deserve to sit on a throne, up higher. Okay? They deserve to sit up higher. And if I'm saying them, then they deserve to be higher. And this gets into a thing. I mean, once you're in a group of people who know the score, right, who have studied for a while, you shouldn't let them disrespect the teaching, okay? In a teaching, you should insist on good behavior, right? They shouldn't there shouldn't be outbreaks, there shouldn't be disrespect, there shouldn't be friction between the students. You have to be a little strict on that, and it's proper, you know. So I've taught, people have come to me who I considered my teacher, and they've asked me to teach them the things that I know that they didn't learn yet. And then I have taught them. And then they try to slip into, I don't know, being, they try to, I don't know how to say, being my teacher during the class. And I say, no. You know, in the years that preceded you coming in here, you were my teacher. But during this class, I'm the teacher. And you have to respect the teaching. You can't talk during the teaching. You can't wander around. You can't interrupt me. During this, I'm passing on to you something sacred. And as long as I'm the mouthpiece for that, you have to pretend I'm the Dalai Lama or something. You can't misbehave in my class. And then after the class, you're the boss again. And you can tell me to go clean the toilet, and I have to. But during the class, if I'm speaking these ideas, I'm the boss. And you should insist on that, okay? Once the students know the score. If they don't know the score, you can't do much, okay? But once they know the score, you should insist on a certain, what do you call it? Protocol or etiquette during a class. And they can't interrupt. They can't wander around, they can't get up, okay? If you're thirsty in a class, you're thirsty, you have to wait. If you have to go to the bathroom in Tibet, you have to wait, you have to sit. And if you're tired or you have a headache or, you know, you don't have a choice. You have to sit and pay attention and be respectful. That's just that's tradition. Because of the sacredness of what's being spoken, okay? And you shouldn't let it be interrupted or, you know, any kind of interruption or misbehavior by the student. You should insist on good behavior, okay? Then after that, they can misbehave. After the class, they can, you know, be Americans. But during the class, they should honor the teaching, okay? And you should insist on it. Okay. Sang Tengsang Utsang Duchakshe Manyambar Yopa Shindulepo Yin. He says nowadays in central Tibet, which was called Utsang, there's a very strict tradition during teaching, you know. The students are required to sit attentively. You're not allowed to drink, eat, you know. You just pay attention. You forget your body and you pay attention and you honor the teaching, you know. And even if you're very sick, you just sit there and you listen, and then you run to have your diarrhea later, you know, like that. Okay, he says that's good. I like that. De min la chen ga shig ne chu gen la wa yin she la ma chi ma wa sha ne chu po lu gi ya chen chen yang sun. He said I heard some reports that disturbed me, that some tukus, right, reincarnated lamas, have been going to. We call Drava Dakyan. Drava Dakyan means just a monk who worked his way up through the ranks and wasn't a reincarnated lama. Had to work up from, you know, cook to geshe. Okay? And he says, and then these reincarnated lamas send him a note and say, I want you to pass on to me the lineage of, what, Mahamudra or something. I need Mahamudra. I didn't get Mahamudra yet in this life. So I'll meet you on Tuesday, and you're going to give me the lineage, you know. And then they come in, and the reincarnated lama sits up on the top, and they set the geshe down there, and they, okay, give it to me. Give me this transmission that I didn't get yet. And he says it disturbs him very much, okay. Like, even if, like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, he still takes teachings from people of many different traditions. And he'll put them up on the throne, and he'll sit down on the ground, and he'll honor them. You know, it's a very good custom. Okay. Namme Chimar Shana Chupuyung Yutin Yutin. Shingi Dangsa Sheba Ang Loma La Zum Dan Chete Chego. When I say that your face during a teaching should be shining, I mean that you should be in a good humor while you teach. You should be smiling and laughing, and everyone should be happy. Okay, he says, you know, you should have a smile on your face. Zum means smile. Zum Dan Chete Chego. Unkyan Longdo Lama Rinpoche. But there's also that system that Longdo Lama Rinpoche used to have, where he sat in the class with a big stick. Okay? And when the student didn't give the right answer, he got the stick. You know, he said, that's also pretty good custom. my Lama kept a big rosary, right? I had a teacher who kept an extension cord. With them, and if you didn't give the right answer, or you were getting sleepy, or you weren't paying attention, he gave you the extension cord. You know, in our monastery, there's also a fan belt custom. Like five big monks will come grab you, and they'll slap you against the wall and pull up your robes and give you a fan belt on your butt. You know, that's also very convincing. Okay, so anyway, there's also that custom. Sache tugne chepa so sing sing bo charo ki sangja tabu dang. He says, don't be like a crow building a nest when you teach the Dharma. Okay, so we were traveling by high-speed train from Shanghai to Beijing. It was winter, right? And it was beautiful. There are many, special kind of tree, but a lot of them had nests in them. And it was winter, so the leaves were gone. But the nests are all, you know, tangled then. He says, Sache Sangsing, Sache Trugne means you didn't prepare for class well. There wasn't proper order to the instructions. And you mess it up, and it looks as tangled as a crow's nest. You know, like you get confused, and you present the earlier stuff later, and the later stuff earlier, and you haven't prepared for the class well. Okay, I've asked Rob and Sheree. Where is Sheree? Yeah, so Sheree's our registrar for the courses, the formal courses. There are 36 formal courses, at least, right? And she keeps the records of who has completed what courses, right? So we're going to put up a list of everybody's name in this place and by tomorrow afternoon. And it will have next to your name the one of the courses that you haven't completed yet, according to her. So I don't care what you think. I ask her, and I believe whatever she says goes. They didn't finish course 3, or they didn't finish course 4. Or then you're going to tell me I finished them, but the teacher didn't send the homeworks in. Then I'm going to say, I don't care. You got to finish according to her. Okay? And then there will be next to your name a course, the lowest ACI course that you haven't finished on record. Okay? I don't know if you have those records with you, but you can fake it. And then and then I want you to finish it by the next 10-day thing, okay? It's not a big deal. You sit there with the tapes. You can do it in your car. The questions are very similar to the Arizona driver's license exam. If you see a red eight-sided sign, should you speed up? Should you turn right? Should you stop? You know, and it's not very difficult, okay? And it will make you a better teacher, okay? So I'm asking you to finish within 3 months, the lowest ACI course that you haven't finished yet on record. Okay, all right. So why? Because then you won't mix up when you're teaching. You won't mix up things. Okay, you won't mix up things. There's almost no Tibetan school that I'm aware of in the West, which requires the students to learn well the material so that they can teach it well. And you should be glad that you are in a group like that. You are required to do quizzes, exams, homeworks, and you're required to know the stuff in the proper order. If you do a Julia Child recipe backwards, if you do things in the wrong order, it's a disaster. Like the souffle just flattens out and nobody can eat it, right? It's the same with Dharma. If you present it in the wrong order, if you mix things up, you can hurt people, okay? So you should continue your training. Every day you should do a little bit, okay? It's not like you spend a, what, Dr. Sykes, he did all 18 courses in a weekend or something. He wrote out the answers from the answer sheets. He wrote them out and submitted 18 courses in a weekend or something like that. Don't do that, okay? Do a little bit every day. It's like having vitamins or something, and it stays in your system if you do a little bit every day. Then you'll be a good teacher, and you won't make crow's nest class. Okay, sing sang yin sang sang tabadam. Kane nam shakte le lawa nam tumba. Mi gengi se sawatabu. Don't be like an octogenarian eating dinner. Don't skip the hard parts and go to the easy part. Like they go for the pudding and they leave the steak, right? Because that's all they can chew. You know. So you're in a lineage which is known for going for the hard parts. Okay. Our lineage is known for skipping the easy parts and going for the hard parts. Alright? So if you're gonna teach this lineage, you gotta. What's it mean, a hard part? A hard part means something you're not sure about or something difficult for you. So in the debate ground, for example, in our lineage, in the debate ground, you always bring up the things that you don't understand yet so that someone can beat you and show you what you don't know. And then the people who want to be safe, you know, like they memorized the Heart Sutra and that's all they memorized. So every debate, they pull it over to the Heart Sutra. Like, don't do that, do the opposite. What you're comfortable with, skip it. What you're uncomfortable with, attack it. And when you teach the students the difficult parts. The easy parts they can get from somebody else. Okay, like you go for the hard stuff. Okay, all right. Dunki ngowo lepar mi shepa utumba Longwa karwala tende dowa tabo mirung. Utsuki tumba longwa. And when you get to a hard part, don't give some fuzzy explanation. We don't want fuzzy explanations, you know? Like you don't really know the answer, so you kind of. In the monastery, there's a style of debating, you know? Like somebody will say, you know, does emptiness imply that things don't function? And you're not clear about that. So you say, that reminds me of a teaching that someone gave me about the proper sitting posture. And then you redirect the debate over to that. And rather than answering the question, which was, if things are empty, can they still function? Right? So if you're not clear on something, say, tell the student, I'm not clear. And I'll get back to you tomorrow. And then go work on it, you know. So be honest. What you don't understand, be honest. Or what you don't remember, be honest. And don't, he says, don't be like a blind person with a cane, you know, struggling through something you don't understand. Say, I don't, you know, to be honest, I didn't work that out myself very well. And I'll get back to you in a couple of days. And then go work really hard for a couple of days. Everything you need to know is in the 18 courses, right? 36 courses. And it's all, the transcriptions are finished. I think Venerable Jigme organized that. Anyway, it took like, I don't know, 10 years. They're all searchable. I mean, if you don't remember the five thises or the six thats, you can just search it. And then get back to your student the next day. Be honest, say, I don't remember. And I'll get back to you on that. And go work on it and get it clear and then come back. Khorla tabo mirung. Deyan daki kyapcha namba rimbo che, ditar sung te, che chepa po shakne, so yong du, kunong lek par che. Then my own precious teacher, Sespabonk Rinpoche, he gave me some private advice about being a teacher. And I like it. It's very sweet. Shakne Tsur Yongdu, when you are walking to the teaching place from your bedroom, start to think of why you're doing it. Start the process when you open the door of your house, to leave your house, to come to the place where you're going to teach. Okay? Start the process when you get in your car to drive to the center where you're going to give the talk. And as you drive, start to examine your motivation and correct it before you get to the class. Okay? So it's going to be too late when you hit the class. Like, you'll have 15, 20 minutes, half hour on the way to the classroom. Then start working on your motivation. Okay? Like, why am I doing, am I trying to be famous? Am I trying to get attention? Am I trying to get a boyfriend or a girlfriend? You know, am I trying to get some money? Or how can I help the people who are going to listen to me today? Try to struggle to bring your mind to that. Nobody's perfect. No teacher is perfect. Okay? Every teacher has ulterior motives that are not pure. Struggle to make them as pure as you can. And be aware of the holes. You know, be aware of your weaknesses. Okay, I have a weakness for money. I have to be careful about the money. I have a weakness for cute boys. I'll be careful in the class about the cute boys. You know what I mean? Like, be honest with yourself and watch yourself. And then as you come to the class, get your motivation cleaned up and spruced up for the class. Okay? All right. Remember Shanti Dar Sinti. Shani. Rang ki chö ti teng du chö kang che pa de tsagyukin lama nam totsek su shupa samla. Whatever subject you're going to teach, as you approach the teaching chair, okay, it could be on the ground. Traditionally, it should be higher. But it depends on what your students are comfortable with, right? If you're in Beijing, it's the first time you've been there, you should sit on a metal folding chair with the other people. See, okay? Just depends. Then as you approach the teaching chair, visualize as well as you can the lamas who have passed on that teaching in the past. If it's Mahamudra, it would be the first Panchen Lama and the lamas who have come after him, right? If it's Bodhisattva things, you could visualize Master Shantideva and some of the major lamas of that lineage. If you're going to teach emptiness, it could be Arya Nagarjuna and Vidya Kokila and Jetsun Kaba and First Dalai Lama, and like that. You can visualize them. They say as a vertical, in a vertical way, with the oldest lamas at the top and the newer, the younger, the later lama, later centuries lamas are lower in front of you. Sagiki lamanam totse su shupar samla ticha len sum tsel. Then it's tradition. I don't do it, but I don't know. Maybe we can start. The teacher, by tradition, makes three prostrations to the throne before they get on it. Because they're visualizing all of the lamas who have taught that subject before, in the last 20 centuries or 30 centuries, they are visualizing them on the throne before they get on the throne. So they, by tradition, you bow down to the throne before you give a teaching. Okay? Chaksum tsel. Detam che chik la chik tim gi rangi tsawe lama tim. Then imagine that those lamas start to melt into each other, from the oldest to the newest, okay? To your own teacher on the throne. Before you get on the throne, they are melting. Nagarjuna is melting into the next lama, and then they're comes down to your own teacher. Okay? Lat Tim. Rang Chirti Teng Du Zek Panna Lama Rang Lat Tim. And as you climb onto the teaching seat, your own teacher melts into you and gives you that blessing of that wisdom. Okay? The wisdom of 20 or 30 centuries has been distilled and enters you as you seat yourself. Okay? That's cool, right? Lama Tim. Tila dukar karma rabri mamidam. Okay. Then you do this thing, you ready? karma rabe mame na gimma sebe ta chubu da milan lo tan tena de duje chunam de ta ta, and you go like this. Okay, milan karma rabe mame na gimma sebe chubu da milan lo tan tena de duje chunam de ta ta, and you snap your fingers. What is that verse? Yeah, it's the last lines of the Diamond Cutter Sutra. Okay, it's a verse of poetry that is at the end of the Diamond Cutter Sutra. All right, and we call the business institute is called Diamond Cutter Institute. We'll talk about that maybe later today, for a reason, right? So diamond cutting is very important for our tradition. All right, and the Diamond Cutter Sutra is maybe the most important sutra of all time. Right, it's the oldest book in the world. The Chinese edition is the oldest printed book in the world. It's in the British Museum. We're going to try to liberate it, but don't tell anybody. At the end of the Diamond Cutter Sutra, the verse treats two subjects, emptiness and impermanence. Okay? The verse treats two subjects together. It kind of interweaves two subjects, emptiness and impermanence. Karma means a star in the sky, which fades as the sun rises, okay? That's talking about impermanence. Rabrib means like a cataract on the eye, which, what do you call it? It affects your vision, okay? Huh? It clouds your vision, yeah. So we all have that, okay? What? We gave the example of try to find a boyfriend, okay? Then if your vision is clouded, it means you will go to Sephora and you will struggle over, should I buy the Lancome or should I buy the, I don't know, Estee Lauder. Like, you see people in Sephora and they look like they're getting a headache. You know, they're like, after you try on three or four, then forget it, you're too confused. And you just buy whatever. And they're trying to think, what would make me look more attractive to attract a nice boy, right? That's a cataract on the eye. That kind of thinking is a cataract on the eye. In this system, the way to get a boy, infallible way to get a boy, it always works. Go to a nursing home. Find an elderly woman. You know, help her once a week. Work to make her less lonely, right? And those seeds will be planted in your subconscious. And then they will fester there. And then they will grow. And they will manifest the perception of a boyfriend, which is a boyfriend. Okay? Thinking you see a boyfriend is what it means to have a boyfriend. Okay? And you could plant that by taking care of an elderly woman. That's to have clear sight. That's to have clear eyes. To think that it matters how you look or what you wear or to try to think of different strategies for finding a boy or starting a business or being more creative, having creative impulses. These are all ignorant. Right? What you want, you must provide to someone else first. And then that will manifest what you want. And how that works, we'll talk about maybe this afternoon. The mechanics. If you know the mechanics, you can be more skilled at it, right? So anyway, to think that it matters whether you wear Lancome or Estée Lauder, what's her name? Estée Lauder, sorry. Is to have a cataract on your eyes. And the world is walking around with cataracts on their eyes. Okay. Karma Rabri Marme. Marme means a butter lamp. One of those little butter lamps. A tea light, right? And then they pass. They die. But they also depend on their fuel and the ignition, right? The sustaining of a boyfriend over a few years' time who's loyal and affectionate comes from the oil, right? The lamp is sustained by the oil. After you get the boyfriend, by helping the elderly lady, you can't stop helping the elderly lady, or he will wear out. The seeds will wear out. You will have your first argument, then you'll have your second argument, and then a year later somebody asks you, who's the person you most hate in the world? You know. It'll be the person you once most loved. Because the seeds wear out. The seeds for a relationship are extremely intense. It burns brightly. It's like a butter lamp made with very fine oil, and it burns brightly and it burns quickly. And unless you sustain, unless you know how to perpetuate the seeds, the relationship must degenerate. Okay? And people don't know that, and they just go through cycle after cycle of relationships, and they suffer. If you understand that, you can help a lot of people, right? You can remove one of the main sufferings in the world. Right? So the example of a butter lamp is not just for impermanence. It's an example about emptiness. Okay? So kama rade mambida gyuma. Gyuma means illusion. Okay, things are an illusion. You pick the red Lancome. You wear it. You meet a boy at a club. He falls in love with you. And then there's an illusion going on. You think it was the lipstick. It wasn't. It was the last trip you made to a lonely person. But the seed ripens through the lipstick. And you think it's the lipstick. And that, okay? And that's an illusion. That's what illusion means. You attribute causes where there are no causes. Yuma silwa means the dew that forms on the grass in the morning, and then it's burned off immediately by the sun coming up. Okay, so your life will pass like that. Your career as a teacher will pass like that. Get on the throne, recite this verse, see yourself give your last teaching, and then you're too old to get on the throne anymore. Okay, you know. Like, start your yoga class and recite the verse and be aware that there will become a day when you can't do any asana except shavasana. No, really, it will come, right? So you might as well think about it when you get on your mat. Think, I'm going to do yoga today for some higher reason. Because the bones and the joints will fall apart on you. Doesn't matter how much yoga you do. Doesn't matter what kind of vitamins you take. You can delay it, you can't stop it. Okay. Silva. Chubur means a bubble. That's self-explanatory, right? Nila means a dream, okay? The thing about a dream is that you can live a dream. I had a dream last night. It went for a long time. I did many, many things. I had to sleep in Ningbo's room. That was a drag. But anyway, because we gave the other room to one of the teachers. But I had this long dream, you know. And then I woke up. And then the dream just fades, right? And then I can't remember what the dream was now. It was long and complicated, and there were a lot of emotions in the dream. But 10 minutes after you wake up, the dream is gone. Okay, your life. When you reach your old age, you won't remember much of the incidents, you know, the big ones, you know, the marriage that was 12 years long and you split up and it was so painful, and then now it's like you can't even remember the person's name, you know, and it will come. All the things that are important to you now, the big crises, they're gonna mean nothing. Like, you won't remember the guy's name. You know, so because a milam means it'll be like a dream. You wake up and you won't remember much. So don't get all caught up in it, you know. Don't be all sad. Things change, you move on. Embrace the new things and let it go like a dream. Okay, milam. Lok means lightning. Lok means lightning. And it at the end of the dream, it all, like at the end of the 60 or 70 years of your life, it seems to have passed very suddenly, okay? Like, days start to speed up. The older you get, days start to speed up. And you spend days like that, you know, and you're like, people are like, what were you doing 3 years ago, Geshe Michael? I'm like, I had no, I don't remember at all. Where were we 2 weeks ago? You know, it was some Asian country. I don't remember exactly. You know, it just starts to accelerate. Okay, Milam Lokdan Tin Tabu. Tin means a cloud. Cloud means you can look at a, especially in Arizona, a cloud will form and then it will melt away. It'll come together and then it'll dissipate like that. Okay, so the events of your life are like that. Duce chinam detarta, duce chinam detarta. The original sutra says duce detarta vaja. Anyway, it's the same thing. Anything which has come about through causes is going to disappear. Okay. The fact that you are born is going to kill you. Okay. Ultimately, it means that all things are coming from seeds in your mind. And those seeds age. And then the things they are creating pass away. Okay? Relationships, health, finances, job, they will all pass away. So as you sit on the teaching throne, it's a tradition to say, then you go like this. You know, like, don't get all caught up in being famous, Geshe Michael. They won't remember your name later. They say, I went to some teaching, I don't remember the guy's name. You know, the last photo of you will be thrown out. Somebody will say, who's this guy? And everybody will say, I don't know. And I say, I don't know why we're keeping it, this photo, and then throw it out, you know. And it's everybody goes like that. Okay. These big kings and emperors, and no one remembers them. They killed millions of people. You know, Mao Zedong in China, it's passing. You know, this person who saved the country and brought it great prosperity and who killed millions of people, then that memory is fading. It's very interesting. You know, so if he can fade, you can fade too. Then don't get a big head about teaching. You know, get up on the throne. If you can't say the verse, you can learn the verse in English. And then you snap your fingers and you say, don't get a big head today, Geshe Michael. You know, teach what you can. Help people. Be honest. Be helpful. Be compassionate and try to help somebody. But don't get a big head, because you also will pass. This also will pass. Right? Okay? All right. That's a tradition. Before you teach, okay. And then there's more, and we'll do that later. Let's do a prayer, and then if Rob has any announcements, we'll do that. Jeff Eddie, you ready?
Sangye Shindu Mite Nuwagi Dokun Nanda Shingla Chupasho Iram Guru Rana Mandala Kamneya Tayani Gewa Di Kewo Kun Sunam Yeshe Soso Shin Sanam yeshe le chombe Dhamma kuni toba sho.
Okay, then we're running a little bit late, so we'll start the yoga later and the dance class, okay? I'd like to come, so he has to cover my yoga class tomorrow, because I want to go to the dance class tomorrow, so, okay? All right.